Hi, and welcome to another edition of 20 Minutes of Teaching Brilliance on the Road with Trust-Based Observations. Today I have with me Rachel Solis, and I was at Rachel's school, Trinity of Midland in Texas, Midland, Texas. That was my first time out west there and about a month ago. And so, Rachel, hi and welcome. Would you do me a favor and maybe just tell the listeners a little bit about yourself, your role, maybe how you got there, your experience along the way so they can get to know you a bit?
Sure. Thanks for having me, Craig. I've been teaching for 9 years. I currently teach sixth grade reading and writing at an independent school, Trinity. I previously taught at a public Title I school. I've been a coach, a robotics coach. I've taught gifted and talented learners, English language learners. I've taught very diverse groups, but I've always taught middle school.
Rachel, I didn't know the robotics. I didn't know gifted and talented. I didn't know ELL. So that, what is your actual certification and how did you end up taking this circuitous, you've gotten to have a lot of experiences. I'll just say that.
Well, gifted and talented required a certification, and I believe it was like 40 hours, but ELLs, that's the great thing about Title I schools is you just get thrown whatever group you're given and you just have to kind of go with it. And it was a great experience. It really was. I love those kiddos.
And I would imagine even the experience with ELLs influences your work with doing middle school English literacy now, right? In terms of probably differentiation, adaptation, and even some of those strategies extend beyond that.
It does. We teach students from different countries. We have a pretty diverse group here at Trinity. So I get to know their culture. They have their own ideas and experiences, and they matter. You know, we have so much to learn from one another. We make authentic connections.
So really just, I mean, why don't we start off with this? Because really, actually, so that's relationships is what you're talking about. And I want to start off with that. But I also heard you say that this is your 9th year of teaching. And as we were talking beforehand, I know you have a 6-foot-tall 14-year-old. So I'm wondering, is this a second career or did you stay home and then change? Like, is there a little something there as well?
Well, I was in the medical field before I was a teacher. Okay. And then I took a little bit of time off with Jackson, probably 3 years at home, and then came into teaching.
You know, it's funny. I've had, as I'm doing this and starting this, at least 3 or 4 of the teachers that have or will be on the podcast, it's their second career. And I'm wondering if there's something with that or something that is there, you can tell me maybe from your experience, is there something that you learned from that experience that maybe makes you think about the education related to the work world in maybe a different way?
You know, I just always wanted to be a teacher.
Okay.
Since my 11th grade year at Midland High with Mr. Walker, you know, all of those classic books just brought me in. Everyone hated them, but I loved them. Uh-huh. So it was just something that I thought I would always pursue and just waited too long to do.
It just took a detour to get there.
So
tell me about your 11th grade teacher. What's the influence?
Well, he introduced us to all different kinds of books. And, you know, we just dove right in and we had to kind of learn how to read them. And I don't know, it was just an experience that I hoped to one day give to my students.
Okay. So just something about his made you want that same thing. You wanted to do the same thing for other people, whatever that gave you, that richness, that pulling you into it. And okay, that makes sense. Okay, well, let's talk. So the day that I was watching you, you were doing a reader's workshop with middle schoolers and you had a group of students. Well, you're working with all of them, but particularly I got to watch you with one group of students. But you talked about relationship and getting to know them. And let's just start there. Let's talk about the importance of relationship in teaching and in learning and reaching our students and helping them succeed. Tell me about just your beliefs and thoughts and maybe your strategies or actions you do to help manifest that.
I really believe that students will work hard for teachers that they love. And we want students to come into class and feel at ease. So I just hit the ground running at the beginning of the school year. I know meeting a teacher and starting a new class can be nerve-wracking. So I really try to kind of give them comfort. We spend some time getting to know each other, having fun. I'll introduce procedures that will follow all year long. And at that point, they can kind of relax because they know what to expect. I build their confidence up and I give them a voice that includes choice.
So you're also tying what ties in so closely to relationships is classroom management, and expectations and boundaries are a part of that. And even though on some levels we as kids rebel from them, we also like having them because that lets us know where the guardrails are at the same time. And so you also talked about choice, and I think you can have rules and expectations, but not be authoritative or authoritarian in the way that you're working with them. And student voice gives them a sense of autonomy. And I think that factors in, is what I'm hearing you say, into that making them like you, or the metaphorical falling in love with their teacher kind of thing, so they'll do work for you.
We have solid procedures every day that we follow. And so when they come into class, they know exactly what to do. And I think that just kind of gives them a level of ease so that, you know, nothing unexpected is going to be thrown at them. They know what to do. They transition smoothly between, you know, activities, and the classroom can basically run itself if I'm not there. If I'm out and I have a substitute fill in, my kids know what to do.
So, but Rachel, we all know that doesn't happen automatically, and it doesn't happen day one or even manifest itself in the first week.
No, it doesn't.
Maybe if we're lucky by the first month, we're really starting to get there. Why don't you talk about how you build that in over time and get that to be where you want it to be? Because you're starting with a new group every year, and you're starting from scratch every year, right?
Yes. So I just love them at the beginning of the year. I feel like middle school is a crazy time in their life, and I want to be that teacher that's there for them, that they can come and talk to. I feel like they're kind of stuck in the middle. They're not adults and they're not kids anymore. They're still excited to learn, though, which is great. They're not those jaded high schoolers yet. So if I can get them to love reading and writing in middle school with my enthusiasm about it, then it'll stick. And then before you know it, we have lifelong learners. So I really get to know them, who they are, where they come from, and they get to know me. I feel like that is probably the most important thing when it comes to making relationships with students, is you have to give that respect first and that love first, and you have to tell your experiences first, and then they will do the same. They'll follow suit.
So you're showing your own vulnerability and your own humanity first, and also just care first through my actions. Okay.
When I plan lessons, you know, I do plan them around their culture, their background, so that I have something to draw from. I get to know what that is at the beginning. And then I look at my teaching material and I ask, am I including everyone? Is this fun? Is this something that my students would even want to do? So at the end of the day, kids just want to learn about what they're interested in and what they spend time on and what matters to them. So we ask questions in class, we share ideas, we address issues affecting our society now. And if they relate to history in any way, we really just get to know each other, and yeah, that's what we do.
So Rachel, as I'm hearing you that, like that, what's popping to my mind is differentiation and adaptive practice, and particularly like related to student interest. And when we unpack trust-based observations or TBO, we always say it's about pulling in that reluctant learner. How do you get that person to engage? Not every learner is like that, but you're thinking about that with each individual student, knowing that if I can tap into their interest, some of it being cultural, some of it being other things like that, there's a better chance that they're going to have fun with the learning as well. Am I hearing you right?
Absolutely. And that starts in the summertime with our books that are required to read before they start school. And so I choose two books, one that is kind of geared toward action, and I think maybe the boys will like, not that the girls don't like it, but, and then I choose another book that is kind of fantasy related, but they're both the first book of a series. Every year I will choose the first book of a series and I'll just grab them with that. And I can't tell you how many kids I've had that have come to me and said, I read number two, I read book number three, I read book number four, I just finished the series. And so that is just so exciting for me. So
that's so interesting to think about the books, the summer reading is as a series. And then because it's a series, then if you've drawn them in, then that gives them the opportunity to push forward on that as well. Oh, I love it.
And then they love coming to school at the beginning of school and talking about those books. And then they have other students to share with, because half the class has probably read this book and the other class has read this book. And so that immediately starts to bring in connections and just shared knowledge and interest and fun.
And I'm sure I'm not there. We weren't there at the beginning of the year, but I'm sure you're giving them time in small groups or in pairs to be able to pair it up with somebody that's the same book, so they can excitedly share about that. So you're building that love of literature and reading at the same time.
Yes.
And really thoughtfully and purposefully. Sorry, go ahead.
I don't push them. So if they're not ready to speak out, or maybe if they're shy, I understand that. And when they're ready, they will, you know, I think probably at month number three, I've got all of them. They're all comfortable here and they're comfortable to share, and they're comfortable to share their experiences, you know, about life and where they come from and who they are, their cultures, their traditions. And it's exciting. It's fun.
So when you're, and I know when we were in there, there were at least, I don't know how many choices there were. I'm guessing there were at least four choices of books. Maybe there were more than that that they had in the interest as well. And I want to talk about that related to the interest as well. But I do want to come back a little bit to, still at the beginning of the year, what they're doing. Like, they were in groups of three to four, I think, when I was in there and we were watching you teach. And so, like, you spent at least 12 of the 20 minutes we were in there with one group, because partially because you had missed them the day before. So you didn't want to shortchange them the day before. Although you probably felt some pressure to, like, I need to see more people because I'm being observed today. If I remember, we talked about that. And we just said, no, do what you normally do. But at the beginning of the year, there's no way those groups function like that, right? I mean, did you have to stop along the way? Did you walk them through it? How did you get them to the point where you can be with the group really for almost the whole 20 minutes and everything's functioning, every kid's on task, totally engaged in the process, in their teams?
I follow the same procedures every day and they don't change. And so, you know, at the beginning of the year, it's a little bit messy. It takes us a little while to transition, but I just follow the same thing every single day. We have a mini lesson, a workshop, and that's where I would introduce the strategy and what it looks like. Students, for that, the students gather together on the carpet, or we may even go outside. We can have workshop anywhere. And we love to do that when we have a beautiful West Texas day. So what's important is that we're together as a group. And they come down to the carpet or outside, wherever we're headed, with their reading notebook and the book that they're reading with their group. And we know they've chosen to read these books with various options, I think usually about five or six. And then while we're in workshop, I'll model the skill, what that looks like. Maybe we'll create some anchor charts together, fill in a plot diagram, watch clips of videos, basically anything that will help them grasp this new skill. And then they can practice it and discuss it with their partner. So then we'll have a quick thumbs up, thumbs down assessment
on how it went.
On how it went.
So they're self-assessing how they're little. So you're stopping it even shorter than you normally once you're going. Okay, how'd it go? I'm assuming the next part is for the thumb sideways or down. We're talking out what happened so then we can strategize to grow it.
So then we all come back together as a class and we discuss and we share out. And I'll do another whole class, thumbs up, thumbs down. And usually that's where I can tell who is not totally on board. And I can tell who I need to go see if I have not neglected a group prior.
It's more differentiating, adapting, and now I'm going to focus on this group and watch that individual student or students to figure out what can I do to help grow that student to become more effective in the process as well. Am I hearing you right?
You are hearing me right. Okay. They go into their book clubs and with their book club members, and where they meet is totally up to them.
More student choice.
It's more student choice. They can huddle together anywhere, on tables, on soft seats, on the carpet, different places around the floor. And that's where I join their group and evaluate. So I'll ask them guided questions, and then they work together to answer those questions.
So let's talk about that then, the day I was in there, because watching you do that, one, you're tracking as you're going, which is an important piece of it as you're doing it, because you're taking notes as you're doing that. And so I want you to talk about that, but also just as you're, let's just walk through that day and that process with those, I think there were three kids. And so talk me through that process.
So I believe that the group that you witnessed was a group that were reading The Fog Diver by Joel Ross. It's a science fiction fantasy novel. And it's about characters who have to fight a terrible fog that's plagued the earth. They've got to save the people and the things that they love. So I would ask them questions like, how does the main character feel about having immunity to the fog? Or what was your opinion of the fog? And would you prefer to have the fog or not? Just really kind of getting to them to think about questions that are not surface questions, that they wouldn't just normally ask each other. And there's some rigor thrown in there as well. So if they don't answer, or they try and just kind of skip over the difficult material, because they do that, we go back and we reread, and then we reconsider. But they know that I'll hold them accountable. That's my job. They also know that I know they can do hard things. I never doubt them, right? And they always prove to themselves that they can do hard things as well. So, but I'll tell them, the material that you want to skip over will present itself again. So learn it now.
And I want to dig more into this. And so what, and it's funny because on the, like on the observation on the TBL form under relationships, we have relentlessness and high expectations. And sometimes people will think, well, how is that about relationships? But when I'm saying, I'm not going to do anything other than accept what I know you're capable of and push you to get there, I don't think there's a higher form of relationship than that.
That's the ultimate form of love. And, you know, they just, from day one, I tell them that they can do anything they want to do. And we work on their writing. We read out loud. We really work hard. And they work hard every day. And I think that they do that because of our classroom environment.
Well, and you've set it up that these are the expectations and that I know you can do it along the way. But even then, like, you know, on the form, we have the use of the questioning, we have that inverted Bloom's pyramid and with the list of questions. And we always say any question can be okay, depending on what's going on. But you're not throwing softball. I mean, you might do a little bit of content, but honestly, I don't even remember one content question that you asked that day. I think they were all like they're pushing, they're analyze, evaluate, synthesizing it to their own lives kind of questions. And so like with those questions, are you like, do you, because you've got six different books that you're running in class, do you, although the themes and what you're asking, the level of them can be the same, are you able to just pull those out, or do you have to think about those questions ahead of time to push those kids for that?
I pull them out.
You're because lucky.
I can see where they're going and I can see what they don't know as they read. And just because of the conversations that they stop and have within their group. And it's usually, my questions are usually right along the lines of what they're talking about. It's just deeper.
So what we're really talking about with that is we're talking about one, checks for understanding / formative assessment, whatever language you want to use. And then two, it's the descriptive progress feedback. And we talk about like there's basic where you give the answer, instructional where you're giving some instructions, but coaching where you're using questions. And honestly, my memory is that it's 100% coaching. It's like getting them to find the answer on their own with, again, persistent, relentless use of questions. And based on what they are and are able to answer, like it feels like, Rachel, you're adjusting every single question based on how they answer to ultimately get them to where they want to go. Can you talk to me about that process?
Well, I don't know if it's a process. It's just experience. It's just what the looks on their faces and the words that they use. And that's really just what it is. I can just, because I know them so well, I just know what to ask them.
So because of relationships, though, you pointed out a couple of things. One, I'm reading each individual student, right? That look on their face. If there's that slight pause, if there's that slight deer in the headlights, if there's excitement or whatever, or if they, and so based on that, that's telling you, oops, I need to come to a different level of question to get them back up to that level down the road. And so there's an experience element in that as well. Okay, I hear you on that. How do you know how far to push? How do you know when to stop? How do you know like where that line is?
I think that we'll get to a point where we're talking in circles.
Yeah.
And they might get a little bit tired. And again, I want them to keep reading. And I guess my line of questioning is really also to target those kiddos that pretend like they know what's going on, because oftentimes they can nod and give me a thumbs up and, you know, just on the surface level look like everything is fine. But then when we get to group and we're, you know, looking for a specific something, they don't have it. So that tells me, okay, let's stop. Let's pull you aside and let's do some quick recap. And then it'll also show up in their discussion logs. So at the end of their book club, the last 10 minutes or so, they'll fill out a discussion log and it'll be geared toward what we're doing. And they know that's their exit ticket. So if for some reason I didn't get to a group and someone kind of went under the rug and I didn't notice that they didn't understand it before they leave, I will, because they have to hand that to me and we have to make sure that they know what's going on. And if they don't, then we do a quick little small group recap and get the skill before they leave. And if they don't, then we know we have to spend a little bit more time on that tomorrow.
And so again, like I'm hearing relentlessness again, high expectations again, but also checks for understanding. And then not only the check for understanding, but like, no, today, whenever I can. Like, we're going to make sure that understanding happens today. I don't want a 24-hour gap until we come back and do that. And not that you can't, sometimes that doesn't happen, but the effort that I'm hearing you say is that, no, we're going to get this understanding today if I have to pull you now. And that exit ticket in the journal log is a quick way for you to be able to do that. And that's like when I see classes, Rachel, like one of the things that I don't see as often as I'd like is people stopping and reviewing at the end, and whether that's an exit ticket or whatever, but you're pointing out like so vitally for people that are out there listening, the importance of that. So we don't leave kids not understanding.
Yes, that's exactly it. I don't have any better way of saying it other than, you know, there are a lot of kids that are just kind of pushed through the system these days and, you know, they're not ready. They don't know the material and the they have to, you know.
Again, it's like a broken record of bliss to me. It's relentlessness and I'm not giving up on you and I'm going to get you there. And it's just so important. And sometimes I think as young teachers, you tell me, Rachel, and maybe in your younger days, because maybe you had to build into this. Sometimes as younger teachers, I think we're afraid to push our kids too hard.
I think that I see that a lot. I see that in parenthood. I see that in teaching. But that's just not the way that kids learn. We can't, you know, be it at home or be it at school, you should have parents and you should have teachers that push you because that's growth. That's the only way you grow. You've got to get out there and learn it. And that's just all there is to it.
Yeah. And zone of proximal development, productive struggle. Obviously we don't want to go too hard and frustrate you that we shut you down.
Yeah. Right. We don't. And there's a limit. We regroup and hit it tomorrow. That's not, you know, you have to be flexible, but I do expect a lot from them.
Yeah. But that's how you get success, right? Is with that. It's just sometimes I think when people, and you started out, like you said, in a Title I school, like I've heard teachers that have said, well, in a Title I school, so kids who are disadvantaged, right? Who weren't given the same opportunities initially as others for all kinds of reasons that we're not going to dig into right now. And sometimes you all hear teachers say, well, but they know we love them. And I just want to care about those kids. And it's like, that's not okay. I mean, of course we want that, but it's not okay to leave it at just that.
You can have both. You can push them and love them. And they know that you're pushing them because you believe in them. There's a difference.
Yes.
You're not loving them and leaving them behind.
No, because I believe you. I'm trying to set you up for success, right?
Correct. Sorry about that. Because it's okay. You just know that they can do better. And I think as we go throughout the year, we learn the limits of every student and we know when to stop just by the looks on their face, just by their body language. And we know when to take it to tomorrow.
So let's talk about that kid, that student where you can sell, ooh, they're overloaded. And sometimes that it might even be sometimes just due to where they are, sometimes due to stuff that's going on at home. And it might even be multiple days in a row of that. Like, how do you find that balance of not giving up on that kid, pushing that kid, yet having an understanding for where they are and what is the exact right way to work with that individual student?
Other than individuality, there isn't any other way. Just by getting to know every single student. And that's the only way that you can do it. You have to know your students and they have to know that you believe in them. And that's the basic.
It's the core really, right? Because all the things that you're teaching without the belief and the individual knowledge of each student, how do I know that I'm not going to push too far on a regular basis and lose that kid?
Well, I think that you just have to read your kids. You just have to. And, you know, we get to know these kids. I have them for an hour and a half every day. I'm not blessed with that much one-on-one time with my kid at home. So we really are a family and we love each other. And so, you know, we can just, teachers, I feel like, can look at a kid and know when he's had enough or she's had enough and still build them up and say, you did wonderful work today. You worked so hard and I'm so proud of you. And keep that positive mindset, because the last thing you want is for a kid to leave and feel defeated. Yeah. That just ruins everything. That's just the exact opposite of what you want. I want them to be able to come in tomorrow and say, hey, hit the ground running and say, hey, let's try this again. You know, and if you don't do that, then you run the risk of losing them.
Which is exactly what we don't want. Rachel, this has been absolutely fantastic. I know that we might have some listeners that might want to be able to learn and dig into a little bit more and learn some of the specific strategies that in 30 minutes we can't quite get into. Are you okay with sharing out your work email or contact information in case anybody wants to reach out?
Absolutely. Work email is rsolis, S-O-L-I-S, at trinitymidland.org.
rsolis@trinitymidland.org. Rachel, thank you so, so much for your time today. It has been an absolute pleasure, and it was a joy, a pure joy to watch you teach those 20 minutes last month.
Thank you, Craig. Thank you for having me.
Take care.
You too.